It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have UW System President Jay Rothman here. In some roadmap, we'll tackle budget priorities, enrollment issues at branch campuses, tuition. We start with next steps on the free speech survey. The system announced the results this month with over 10,000 students filling it out. Call in about freedom of speech on college campuses, what you think, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jay Rothman is the ninth president of the University of Wisconsin System. President Rothman, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
So the results of the free speech survey, they're out. What surprises you about the results?
You know, to be honest with you, not a lot surprised me about the results. You know, what it reflected, we live in a polarized society, and that's not a big issue at all. I think we know that. Secondly, I think what I find very helpful to us is the data are going to be invaluable as we continue to try to improve civil dialogue on our campuses. The one piece that I wasn't surprised about, but I was very pleased to see, is that our students believe our faculty and instructional staff are doing a great job of raising divergent viewpoints in the classroom. But we do have some challenges around people being willing to raise their opinions and raise their hand and voice their opinions on some difficult issues.
How do you envision universities could better communicate to students what their First Amendment rights are? And how could they better help them speak out and speak their minds?
You know, we've started that process already because we wanted to take the survey results and really put them into action. I think the first is to raise people's consciousness. And we started that once we released the survey results. We had a panel discussion involving faculty and involving legislators about how we can do a better job. And I think just raising that consciousness, I think that's going to occur on our campuses. I know there are conversations ongoing about how we do a better job of that. But it really, this is a great opportunity for us, I believe, to continue to enhance and model civil dialogue. Because to the extent that people aren't raising their views, there may be a variety of reasons. They're concerned about being labeled or shamed or marginalized if they raise their views. If we're going to have a vibrant discussion, if we're going to have a passionate discussion about serious issues, we need to have people weighing in. Universities need to be marketplaces of ideas. Where ideas are brought to the fore, they're challenged, they're discussed, because the problems we're seeking to solve in our state, in our nation, in our world are not going to be solved by sound bites or tweets. They need vibrant, passionate discussion. And that's really where we want to take what we learned from the survey and really further enhance the great dialogue that's already going on our campuses.
So based on these results, do you feel there needs to be UW system policy development action around the survey and free speech?
I don't think so. I mean, there are already policies out there. The system has a policy. The regents adopted a policy around freedom of expression. I think we now need to get to the point where people are comfortable raising their views. They are comfortable asking in good faith questions. And then on the flip side, so that people don't get labeled when they do that, they don't get marginalized when they do that, there's a fulsome discussion around the topic at hand. And, you know, we're a microcosm of society. Right now, it's difficult to do that in a polarized society more generally. We want to be models at the universities about how you do that and how you do civil dialogue well, because I think we can be the key to start changing the trend so that we can have those vibrant discussions.
So just to clarify, you don't feel that at this time you would need to fortify or add to Region Policy Document 421 that refers to freedom of expression?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's a question of policy. It's a question of, are we living the First Amendment? Are we? And Representative Dave Murphy mentioned, he was sat on the panel a couple of weeks ago. He mentioned we need to live the First Amendment. We need to live free speech. And I think that's what it means. Free speech, and it really is driven by that civil dialogue where we can sit down and have those difficult discussions. We can agree to disagree, but we don't label people. We don't shame people. We don't try to put them in a corner. We listen to them. We learn from them. To the extent we disagree, we express that, but we do that in a respectful fashion.
You've said before one of the reasons you took the system president job was because civil dialogue and freedom of expression are so important to you. And I'm wondering, in light of your personal values, what would you like to see implemented next to deepen your commitment to the First Amendment and at your 13 universities?
Yeah, I think we've already done that. One of the four pillars of our new strategic plan that was adopted by the Regents in December focuses on civil engagement and civil dialogue. And I think part of it is simply continuing the conversation, continuing it and modeling civil dialogue. I plan to do that personally. We're doing some events on our campuses upcoming called It's Just Coffee, where I will sit down with students of divergent viewpoints and really talk to them about civil dialogue and see if we can model civil dialogue. I think it's a learned behavior. And we're in an era from a societal perspective where we are so polarized that those dialogues aren't going on. We think the universities have to be models of that. And I think we can help our students do a better job in terms of having those civil dialogues, talking about those difficult, those third rail issues, but doing so vigorously, passionately, but yet civilly.
Talking with UW System President Jay Rothman about the free speech survey, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Digging a little bit more here into the survey, about 40% of students who identify as very liberal favor banning the expression of views that they find harmful. And the rate is about 7% among students who consider themselves, quote, very conservative. What does that difference tell you?
Well, I think it tells me that we have more work to do because freedom of expression requires different viewpoints to be brought to bear. Senator Royce, who participated in our panel discussion, said it, I think, really clearly. She said freedom of expression means that people are going to be uncomfortable from time to time. And you have that balance between we want people to feel like they belong, but we also want them to be exposed to ideas with which they may not agree, because that's how you develop and that's how you build a perspective. Our students are being exposed to that wide variety of views, and then they'll make up their own mind. But I think that is troubling to me, that there were people who believe that we should disinvite people who would raise contrary views. I understand it. I think it was coming from a good place. They wanted to protect their fellow students. But on the other hand, I think we have to be careful about that. We have to make sure ideas with which we disagree have a voice on campus.
But where
and
do
then
you
they can be evaluated for their merits.
Where do you draw the line, though? Where should the university system draw a line when it comes to racist views, homophobic views, anti-Semitic language?
I think that the university needs to draw the line where the First Amendment draws the line, where the Supreme Court has drawn the line, that you can't do things that, for example, incite violence. But the First Amendment is relatively broad, and it encourages issues to be raised. Doesn't mean there aren't, you know, consequences if people say something that is, you know, racist or homophobic, whatever. There are consequences for that. But it is something that I think it is important that those views are out there, that it's not the university's place to say, well, this is what should be talked on about campus, but we can't talk about this. Because I think that gets down to a point where we're not going to have that marketplace of ideas that we need, and I think that our students deserve.
Let's bring on a call now. Steve with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is a good lead-in about what the host just talked about. So the Black Lives Matter movement talked about how civil dialogue is actually a tool of white supremacy. Want to know what the guest thoughts about that ignorant comment.
Thanks, Steve. I mean, I think, you know, civil dialogue is something that is, you know, is part of the First Amendment. I think it's what it's made our society great, that interchange of ideas. And I think we should have civil dialogue broadly, because, again, as I said earlier, we're not going to solve the issues we face as a society with sound bites and tweets. We're not going to solve the issues by shaming people, by trying to label people. We have to have vibrant discussion, and then people will make up their own minds about what the right path is forward, and that is as it should be.
Let's bring in Saeed in Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering if the speaker would make a pledge that no one who's scheduled to speak on any of these campuses will get canceled because people that don't like to listen to that perspective are demonstrating.
So ensuring that someone who is scheduled to speak will not be canceled due to protests. President Rothman.
You know, we're going to continue to promote civil dialogue. We're going to continue to promote having marketplaces of ideas on our campuses. That's what they're all about. We want people of divergent viewpoints to express them. And to the extent people disagree with them, I think it's fine if they protest. Not disrupting the speaker, not trying to undermine the message while the speaker is making his or her message. But if they want to protest somewhere, that's great. That's what happens. That is the marketplace of ideas in action. That's some of the uncomfortableness that the First Amendment is intended to promote. Because through that, we all grow, we get better. Our thinking becomes clearer, I think, over time. And that's what we're trying to do at the University of Wisconsin system.
Jay Rothman, president of the UW system, overseeing its 13 universities across 26 campuses. Call in with your questions, your comments about the UW, 800-642-1234. It is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have UW System President Jay Rothman as we touch down on pressing issues and budget priorities in the system, which serves 165,000 students, employs 40,000 people. Call in with what's on your mind, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Turning now to budget, the system is requesting an additional $262 million in state funding during the next two-year budget. Why are you urging this additional funding?
I think a couple of things that I would note. One is we requested through the regents approved and it went to the governor, and the governor obviously will release his budget later this week. But we asked for a 4% and a 4% increase in our operating budget, simply to try to keep up as best we could from a spending power perspective with our with inflation. But I think the most exciting thing to me in the budget request that we made was the Wisconsin tuition promise, which would extend and take tuition off the table for students coming from families with $62,000 or less in income. I believe this is a game changer for the state. We are struggling with workforce. We need more engineers. We need more nurses. We need more teachers and so on. This helps get students that might not otherwise be able to go to school the opportunity to go to school, and that is a game changer. It also enhances social mobility because we know that that four-year degree really enhances your ability. You know, the economics are unassailable about the impact that that four-year degree can have on your future earnings and your contributions to society.
Are Republican lawmakers who control the legislature, are they receptive to funding the tuition promise effort with state aid?
You know, we're continuing to have that discussion. I've had some very open and candid discussions with legislators on both sides of the aisle, and I've been encouraged in terms of where their discussions are. I keep focusing on the University of Wisconsin system is here to serve the state of Wisconsin. That is its role. And when you look at a state that is challenged with workforce challenges, the UW system can be a magnet for talent into the state and keeping talent in the state. And the tuition promise really helps us do that. It helps us raise the level of talent in the state. We have set as a strategic goal in our new strategic plan that will increase by 10% the number of graduates that we produce by the end of 2028. Going from 37,000 a year to 41,000, that's a significant lift for us. It requires us to enhance our enrollments. But if you look at, we are operating in a knowledge economy. this is Wisconsin's demographics are not great.
It's an aging demographic, and that is a significant number of graduates to turn out. How do you parse that with our aging population?
Well, I think you look at it and say we have a number of underrepresented students, including those of lower socioeconomic means, that may not feel that college is available to them. The Wisconsin Tuition Promise is one way to get more students into our system. We remain affordable. And if you look at the statistics that we did an affordability study last year, shortly after I came into office, and we are the best value in the Midwest among public universities by far. But for some people, we are not affordable. The Wisconsin Tuition Promise allows us to take the tuition piece off of the table. That makes it more likely. We think we'd get another 8,000 students over the course of on a rolling 4-year basis. 8,000 students more into the system and graduated. That makes a significant difference, helps fill that gap in talent that Wisconsin has. And that gap is gaping. I talk to employers all of the time. I came from the private sector. I know how difficult challenges they are having trying to find people. This is one way we can help solve that problem and serve the state.
This Tuition Promise program, it's, as you know, is called a last dollar program. So what if Pell Grants and other federal aid would be dramatically reduced? Can Wisconsin keep this commitment for the long run?
You know, I think, rather than discuss that hypothetical, in fact, the federal government just increased the Pell Grants. I think the federal government sees the importance of higher education. We will do our best to support it. The system believes strongly enough in it. We're funding it ourselves for the first year, and we're asking for the legislature to provide funding for it thereafter. I think it is that important to our state. It is that important to filling and helping us win the talent war, and it is that important to helping us create social mobility for people in our state who would not otherwise have that mobility.
Looking now at salaries for your state employees, almost half of the extra funding would go toward 8% pay increases to account for inflation, historic inflation. Is the system struggling to attract marquee faculty?
Yeah, I think it's important to note, Kate, that the budget request for compensation increases, it's 4%. In the first year of the biennium and 4% in the second year of the biennium. That's really not even keeping us going, tied to inflation, but we thought it was a reasonable request under the circumstances. Are we having issues? I think the answer is yes. Quite frankly, our faculty and our staff are not being paid at market levels, not even compared to the private sector, but when we look at comparable universities, we're not paying them fairly. And are we losing people as a result of that? I think anecdotally, yes, we are. And that's not good, because at the end of the day, it's those professors, it's those instructional staff, it's those academic advisors, so on and so forth, that are so critical to providing a great experience for our students. This system has been a godsend for the state of Wisconsin. I lived in the state my entire life. I know the impact that it has. And what we're asking for is a continuation of that investment, because that system has helped make Wisconsin such a great place to live and to work.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with UW System President Jay Rothman. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's take stock of restructuring. About 5 years ago, the system restructured and turned 13 two-year colleges into branch campuses of 4-year research institutions. And since then, we've seen enrollment has dropped at branch campuses more than at the 4-year colleges. Is the restructuring succeeding and going as planned?
I think as you look at community colleges more generally across the country, they're seeing that same decline in enrollment that some of our branch campuses are. And we're working now to try to best position those branch campuses to be successful. UW Green Bay has had some really interesting ideas about how it does, and really is considering those branch campuses simply as other locations of the university. UW Stevens Point, as an example, is offering an MBA program at the Wausau location. UW-Milwaukee is putting four-year nursing and has four-year nursing in its Waukesha campuses. So there are ways that we can meet our accessibility goal at the same time to try to do our best to make sure those branch campuses are viable. So there's more work to do on that, and we are going to continue it as we move forward.
Is closure an option at any of the systems colleges or the branch campuses?
I think what we're looking for first is if we're going to meet our enrollment goals, that will lead toward hitting that 10% increase in graduates by 2028, we need to do our best to maintain accessibility, and those branch campuses play an important role in that. At the same time, we have to be good financial stewards, and we have to be good stewards of the student experience as well. And that's what we continue to focus on. It's a balance, but my belief is we should do everything within our power to, within the entire system, do our best to increase the number of students that are enrolled, because Wisconsin needs them. It's not a question about is this good for the system or not good for the system. Wisconsin needs the nurses, they need the teachers, they need the engineers, they need the data scientists. And if we don't turn them out, those jobs are going to go elsewhere, and it's not going to be in this state, and that's not going to be good for Wisconsin.
President Jay Rothman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time today.
You too. Jay Rothman became the 9th president of the University of Wisconsin System in June. And for disclosure, Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of UW-Madison. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.